Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is a Texas original, Kinky Friedman, singer, songwriter, novelist, humorist, and sometimes political candidate. In 1971, Friedman formed his most famous band, Kinky Friedman and the Texas Jew Boys, a play on Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, singing songs that combined satire, social commentary, along with raunchy humor. And through the 1970s, they recorded and toured with artists like Bob Dylan. In the 1980s, Friedman began writing a series of popular detective novels that featured a fictionalized version of himself solving crimes in New York City and dispensing the Kingster's own brand of homespun Texas wisdom. In 2004, Friedman ran for governor of Texas in what has been called a, quote, serious but colorful, unquote, campaign. And during the months leading up to the election, he looked to be a serious contender. He raised more money than the Democratic nominee and was polling extremely well with a mix of libertarian, progressive, and conservative positions. But ultimately, he finished fourth in a six-man race with 13% of the vote. He has since run unsuccessfully for Texas Agriculture Commissioner. Today, he continues to perform and write. He has a new book that's coming out in the next year or so. Plans are in place to create a limited television series based on his novels. And he works to save animals from euthanasia at his Utopia Animal Rescue Ranch near Kerrville, Texas. He'll be making an appearance tonight at 8 o'clock at the Oklahoma Jazz Hall of Fame, located at 111 East 1st Street. And he joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Kinky Friedman, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. It's always a pleasure to have you with us.
Rich, it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, exactly. You're going around the country touring right now. You're going to be appearing tonight. And from what I can hear, it's sort of a little bit of a life story with music. How would you describe this evening coming up?
It's a journey in time. This is called the Misunderstood Genius Tour. And it takes you back to 1973 when the Jew Boys, my band, first got together. And some of our experiences playing at University of Buffalo was one of our first gigs up in New York, upstate New York. We had a song back then called Get Your Biscuits in the Oven and Your Buns in the Bed, which was getting a lot of airplay. And about halfway through the show, we did it. And a group of, shall we say, cranked-up lesbians attacked the stage. And they began wrecking all the equipment and fighting with the Jew Boys. And they were winning. So the campus cops were called, and the local police came in, and they gave the band and me a protective escort off the campus. And about 3 months later, I received the Male Chauvinist Pig of the Year Award from the National Organization for Women, an award I'm still very proud of. And anyway, we'll be doing that number, I'm sure. Right? And then the tour with Bob Dylan in 1976, the Rolling Thunder Review. And we all took a break in L.A. for about a month. And this song, well, I was in a bar called the Troubadour. Are you familiar with that place?
Yeah.
Music bar?
Yeah, it was a great
and
music
that night,
club.
I think I was drinking a Diet Hemlock. And a guy comes in with a straw riverboat gambler cowboy type hat, and he's got this little red facial hair. And I said, oh, this is one of these Texas singer-songwriters I know. But I don't know which one it was, you know, because I've been kind of out of the loop. Was it Ray Wiley Hubbard, you know? Was it the late, great Rusty Weir, you know, B.W. Stevens? And the guy makes a beeline for me, of course, and he says, Kingster, let me buy you a round. You know, he sits down next to me. He seems very intimate and friendly. And I'm kind of fishing for a clue as to who the hell he is, which one of the songwriters he was. And he never really gave me one, but very friendly, seemed to know me. And about half an hour, he bought all the rounds. And about half an hour later, we went into the men's room and did a long line of Peruvian marching powder from 1976. He provided. Came back, he bought more drinks. And now we had kind of passed the time when I could comfortably ask him who he was, you know. So I had to keep going with his charade as if I knew. And finally, I'm having a crisis of conscience about it. So, I wanted the truth, even if it hurts his feelers a little bit, you know. So I turns to the guy and I says, look, pal, I hate to do this, but what is your name? And he says, Eric Clapton. And how I missed the accent, I don't know. I must have really been walking on my knuckles. But so that's how I actually met Eric. And then about 2 weeks later, we recorded this song out at Shangri-La, the band studio, with Eric agreeing to play Slide Dobro on it. And Lowell George of Little Feet on guitar Dr. John on keyboards, Rick Danko on bass, and Levon Helm on drums.
That's a pretty salty little band
we
right
could,
there.
We couldn't get the A-team, but we did the best we could. And I just saw Ringo a couple nights ago in Austin and hung out with him a little while. And I remember that Levon had always said that being a drummer is the best seat in the house. You can see the band and the audience and everything. And Ringo never agreed with that. Ringo always said that his one regret was he never got to see the Beatles. but they're both great, just great. And Levon will really be missed.
So, anyway,
back to this this Clapton deal.
Yeah.
The song is a little children's song. It's the first song I ever wrote. I was 11 when I wrote the thing. And I'm still in a little bit of a petulant snit because the song is so well known. When I traveled to Australia or Europe, everybody, the audience all sings along. All of them heard it from their parents who taught it to them. So Kinky, it was not a financial pleasure for the Kinkster, you see. It was never played on the radio much or anything. Well, maybe we'll play it today, you know.
All right. Well, and so I guess
do
what
it right
this,
now.
Yeah, okay, let's do it right now.
And like, let me. Old Ben Lucas had a lot of mucus coming right out of his nose. He'd pick and pick till it made you sick, but back again it grows. Just 11 years old when I wrote the damn thing. When it's cotton picking time in Texas, boys, it's booger picking time for Ben. He'd raise that finger, mean and hostile. Stick it in that waiting nostril. Here he comes with a green one once again. All right, everybody, pick it. Old Ben Lucas had a lot of mucus coming right out of his nose. He'd pick and pick till it made you sick, but back again it grows. Once more. Old Ben Lucas had a lot of mucus coming right out of his nose. He'd pick and pick till it made you sick, but back again it. Everybody in Tulsa. Old Ben Lucas had a lot of mucus coming right out of his nose. He'd pick and pick till it made you sick, but back again it grows.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. My guest today, Kinky Friedman, writer of mystery novels, singer, songwriter.
Governor of the heart of Texas.
Governor of the heart of Texas, if not in fact.
Boy, it is a good thing to be out of politics. I was thinking, Rich, I've run for a number of offices.
I know governor, but what else did you run for?
I ran for ag commissioner this
past
time.
That's what I was thinking. I was running for agriculture.
Mistakenly as a Democrat. And I'm not a Democrat anymore. I'm sending Obama my message by voting straight Republican this time. But I have lost almost as much, not quite, almost as many elections now as Winston Churchill and Abraham Lincoln. I'm in that special group of people, yeah. And Willie Nelson gave me two great pieces of advice. One of them was, if you fail at something long enough, you become a legend. And the other thing Willie told me has served me very well, not only in politics, but in life. He said, if you're going to have sex with an animal,
oh my God,
always make it a horse. Because that way, if things don't work out, at least you know you've got a ride home. So, I mean, the people have spoken, the bastards, you know, and right. That's it. And I was for legalizing pot and hemp, and there's a million reasons why Texas should do that, and most of the people are for it.
Now, did you actually get in as sort of a protest, or were you actually serious from the get-go? I mean, what did you end up—
The governor's race?
Yeah, the governor's race.
About 13% we got.
13, yeah. And it polling at one point, you were 20, 30. Yeah.
That happens a lot, apparently, with independents. Some of them can get up in the 20s like we did, but then the parties and the media start working on you, and they pour a lot of money into it, and everybody comes home to what they're comfortable with, and the independent gets screwed. And this is a real problem. I think it's the reason we've got Forrest Gump for president. I am not a Democrat anymore, as mm-hmm. I say. And I'll let you know a little secret. Most Democrats today aren't really Democrats either. They just don't know it. Because the Democrats really, look who Texas provided. Barbara Jordan. The first black congressperson from the South. She should have been president. She should have been a Supreme Court justice. Ann Richards, Molly Ivins, Sam Rayburn, Sam Houston, going way back.
Yeah.
Some great people.
Lyndon Johnson.
Stood up for the people. Well, I don't count Lyndon. He was...
Well, he was a complex man.
He was. I think JFK did much more without actually doing any legislation. He had what Obama and Rick Perry and these people don't. By the way, I've got my last will and testament workout. When I die, I'm going to be cremated, and the ashes are to be thrown in Rick Perry's hair. So we have that going.
Well, for the first time in a long time, Rick Perry's not running for governor in Texas.
No, but I was showing some folks from out of town around Austin recently, and one of them said, "Hey, that's a beautiful statue of Rick Perry y'all put up there." And I said, "That is Rick Perry." But one thing I said in the campaign that is really, somebody reminded me of recently, that's really true and a good reason, I think an explanation for why everything is so screwed up and why the politicians are really bad people. They were hall monitors when they were kids. They know how to play the system. You know, I'm not calling Rick Perry a crook. He just knows how to game the system, play the system. It's legal. But, I mean, your Indian tribes up here are giving more money to Texas politicians than they are to Oklahoma politicians to keep gambling out of Texas. You know, that's on the record, not slipping it under the table. They're paying millions of bucks to them. But what I was going to say is that JFK had this inspirational ability that a spiritual wimp like Obama doesn't have. And, of course, there's not a young person in Texas that wants to grow up to be Rick Perry. So they have zero inspirational.
So do you feel disillusioned by Obama because he did have that rhetoric as he was first?
No, it just showed you how the crowd always picks Barabbas. That's all. They always say, kill Jesus, free Barabbas, every damn time. It's been like that ever since. And they did it with him. I mean, they got a guy who's really a good cheerleader. By the way, both Rick Perry and George W., K. Bailey Hutchison, and Obama's a good cheerleader, too. That's what they are. But back to this JFK deal, when the first Peace Corps group, I joined the Peace Corps because of him. I mean, he influenced millions of young people, including Bill Clinton, to get into politics, do something, you know. That was his dream. And he stood on the White House out there on the front lawn when the first Peace Corps kids came through, and I was in the second or third bunch. I was not there for this, but they were really a ragtag bunch of dreamers, you know, and great young people in their 20s. Early 20s, most of them. And JFK looked at him and he pointed to him. He said, "You are important people." And he was right. It's exactly the people that we're missing today. When you wonder, when you say, where do we go to give up, you know? And the Republicans and the Democrats are really the same guy admiring himself in the mirror. Well, of course they are. And the reason I think is because the amateurs are not getting into politics. They're staying away. The professionals are. They're drawn to it. They're really not good people. But the amateurs, the good people, the smart people we have, the ones who care about America and about people, they're not getting involved. And during the campaign, the slogan that I used at the time, I recall, was, it was the professionals who built the Titanic. It was the amateurs who built the Ark. And that's true.
Is there a way of getting the amateurs back into the process, or you think...
I don't know. I'm pretty...
I would imagine you're pretty jaded about it.
Rich, I'm very glad to be out of politics. You know, my definition of politics is poly means more than one, and ticks are blood-sucking parasites. So I'm pretty happy to be out of it, and I'm a little surprised at the Democrat leadership, which really worked harder to beat me than they did to get their candidates elected, because their candidates don't have a chance. They're going to get crushed. And I was the guy who had a chance because I could get independent and libertarian and Republican support. But they didn't want to win. They've kind of forgotten what this is all about. It's about winning elections. And now Texas is going on 22 years without any Democrat being elected to statewide office. So, you know, those are not people that we ought to be listening to.
My guest today is Kinky Friedman. He'll be appearing at the Oklahoma Jazz Hall of Fame tonight at 8 o'clock. He'll be singing a little bit, telling some stories, and I guess this is just sort of telling your life story tonight.
I guess I'm a writer, or a drinker with a writing problem, as Brendan Behan once said. And I'm writing the first mystery novel in 10 years.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, you quit writing for about 10 years. Why was that?
I've been playing on the road. Well, politics got in the way. Yeah. And I've been, and by the way, the race in 2006 we won every place but Texas. You know, that's the truth. Yeah. I am doing this Misunderstood Genius tour here around the Midwest a little bit, and then, well, I guess this isn't really the Midwest, is it?
Yeah.
Whatever the hell it is, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Then it's going well, and then in January I'll be in Australia doing a tour there. That will be a journey in time. And then a bunch of shows in Europe in February, including 12 shows in Germany. And you may know, Rich, that the Germans are my second favorite people, and my first is everybody else. Lord. And I am going deaf, which I like, because I don't have to hear all the bullshit of the world. You know, it's wonderful. And I only have two things I'm interested in anyway, and they are Libya and Charlie Sheen.
I don't even sure I want to get into that.
Now, Willie has three areas of interest, which are music, drugs, and golf.
That's true.
And, of course, I don't play golf. I'm not really interested in that. The only two good balls I ever hit was when I stepped on the garden rake.
Hello, bing bong.
But
well, I want to ask about something you are really passionate about, and that is your Utopia Animal Rescue Ranch. You've been doing that for a long time. How did that get started?
I think I was finding a lot of stray animals and bringing them over to my friend, Cousin Nancy, who's a, not really a cousin, but she was recently widowed back then, and she needed something to do, so she pretty soon developed a menagerie. And she lived in Utopia, and then finally the neighbors came with pitchforks and ran her out of there. And so my dad gave her part of our ranch, and that's a beautiful place now, a Utopia Animal Rescue Ranch. Any animal lover, just go to utopiarescue.com, and it'll tell you the story. But it's been great. It is really, we take in any stray or abused animal.
Are you involved with it day-to-day?
I'm the Gandhi-like figure. I raise money, I tour, you know, but I don't do the day-to-day work. But Gandhi didn't do a hell of a lot of work, actually.
Well, he did a lot of thinking.
Yeah, he did. You know, Gandhi was one of those. Well, do you know the Nelson Mandela story, Rich? You
know? Yeah,
I mean, my involvement?
No, I don't.
Well, in 96, I went to South Africa, touring with the book God Bless John Wayne, mystery novel. And I did a couple concerts, and I did a big TV show from Johannesburg. And the host of the show was, national show, was Dolly Tombo. And Dolly Tombo's a young guy whose father was Oliver Tambo, who was Mandela's mentor. And so Dolly tells me during the commercial break, this other guest is on here, and he wants to talk to you. And he's been Mandela's right-hand man forever. So after the show, I go over to this guy, and his name is Tokyo Seshwale, spelled sex whale.
Okay.
And Tokyo tells me that he was Mandela's right-hand man, still was at the current time when I was there, and that when Mandela served 17 years on Robben Island in prison, Tokyo was in the cell next to him. So he said, you know, Kinky, that Mandela's a big fan of yours. And I said, that's great. He said, which book is it? What, he reads the books? He said, no, it's not the books at all. It's the music. Then he proceeded to tell me that they could hardly get any music in the place, but they could smuggle in some tape cassettes, which is what they did occasionally. And Tokyo heard Mandela playing the song Sold American a couple times, mm-hmm, on my first album. And then he said, then Mandela stumbled on to Ride 'em Jew Boy, and which is on the same record. And he said, now, Mandela played Ride 'em Jew Boy every night for the better part of 3.5 years. It was like his mantra. And sometimes he would play it repeatedly the same night. And I started thinking, where was I? In 73, when we made this record with Tom Paul and the Glazer brothers and Chuck Glazer producing, you know, you never know who you're going to reach, of course, but we were thinking, what will the disc jockeys think? Is there a hit song here? I never in my wildest dreams thought that Nelson Mandela would be listening to this in his prison cell on Robben Island. And people, and by the way, they tried to kill Mandela. They tried to work him to death in the quarries. It was not at all a fixed deal that Mandela was going to be president or anything like that at all.
No, it was not until it happened,
right,
really. I mean,
right,
that all happened very quickly.
But in a very Christ-like manner, he turned the guards, who were like Nazis, and they who had just tried to kill him were then cheering Viva Mandela the night he won the election. But I was wondering why he liked this song. It's The Measure of the Man, which is not about black kids, African kids starving. It's about the Holocaust. It's a Western translation of an Eastern experience. And Mandela, I think we forget he was a lawyer, and he couldn't get in any law firm because he was black. So finally the Jews took him in Johannesburg, and this Jewish law firm was radical, very left. But they loved Nelson Mandela, and they told him, Nelson, stay out of politics, man. Don't be a troublemaker. Don't cause trouble. You will be the most famous lawyer in all of South Africa. That's all you have to do. And, of course, fortunately for all of us, Mandela did not take their advice. And instead, when his five-year-old daughter hugged him one night and said, Daddy, why are you always gone? He said, because there's millions of little boys and girls just like you all over South Africa, and I've got to look after them, too. So Tokyo told me this, and it was like, it was stunning. And then Tokyo said, Kinky, don't get a swelled head about this, because you're not his favorite singer, okay? You're probably down fourth or fifth on the list. But I'll tell you who his favorite singer was. Dolly Parton. And when he said that, I knew that Tokyo was telling me the truth. That's so human that a guy like Nelson Mandela would like Dolly Parton. But that Ride 'Em Jew Boy was the song. So later I did, fairly recently, I did an interview with Huffington Post, some young guy. I was telling him this about Mandela, and he said, you know, he said, if I had a choice between being a big star and making millions of dollars playing stadiums and all that, or being the guy who wrote a song that Nelson Mandela listened to in his prison cell every night, I'd be that guy. I'm thinking, which would I rather be, making millions of dollars or being the guy that wrote the song? But I may not agree with this kid on that, but it's nice. I mean, it's really, it's a very nice thing. And man, I think it's probably nicer to have written the song, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you are writing again, writing, I assume, mystery novels?
Oh, yeah.
Your Kinky Friedman novels?
Well, the last one, 10 Little New Yorkers, the Kingster dies.
Yeah.
And now this is like Sherlock Holmes coming back.
You're going to come back, yeah.
But it's called The Hard-Boiled Computer, and I'm knocking out. I'm writing like Oscar Wilde in prison with my hair on fire.
And you have a TV series coming out.
Well, this thing's looking real interesting, yeah. These Australians have bought the rights now to...
It's going to be in Australia?
No, it's an American deal. Okay. Yeah. And it would be like Fargo or one of these six-episode...
Right.
And it would hopefully have... I mean, my dream team would be Robert Duvall as the old Kinky in the loft there with his old cat and smoking a cigar and drinking Jameson and narrating. And the character that he's talking about when he was happening younger would be Billy Bob Thornton. Jack Black would be great.
Yeah.
Jeff Bridges would be great.
Hmm.
But I think that you'd need Jack Black or Billy Bob are both funny as hell. And doing a Jewish country singer in Texas who solves mysteries... you know, things have changed, Rich. Adults do not go to the movies. We watch these very expensive episode things with big actors on TV. So,
well, we wish you great success with that. Is that in the development stage, or is it happening, or in the process of happening?
It's happening, but it's not until we get that big star locked in.
Yeah.
We don't know quite. There's a writer they've got named Colin McPhillamy, who's a Brit, a crazy Brit, brilliant theater writer, never written for television or the movies, only writes for theater. That's the guy they've chosen to write this. Hmm. Now Billy Bob Thornton would like to get involved, too, with the writing or the directing and maybe starring in it.
Yeah.
So this thing could get real interesting.
All right. Well, we'll look for that in a box at some point.
Well, if that happens, it'll be like Tolkien, you know, where he had fans, but The Hobbit wasn't really happening until he died. And I may have to die first, Rich, but...
well, let's hope not.
Hopefully not, but...
Well, we hope a lot of people come out tonight at the Oklahoma Jazz Hall of Fame to hear you tonight at 8 o'clock singing. And why don't you leave us with one more song? Can you leave us with a song?
Sure, absolutely. All right, well, yeah, we look forward to this. It's going to be a good one, I think, a real good one.
Okay.
Well, a redneck nerd in a bowling shirt was a guzzling Lone Star beer, talking religion and politics for all the world to hear. They ought to send you back to Russia, boy, or New York City one. You just want to doodle a Christian girl and you kill God's only son. I said, has it occurred to you, you nerd, that that's not very nice? We Jews believe it was Santa Claus that killed Jesus Christ. You know, you don't look Jewish, he said. Near as I could figure, I had you lamped for a slightly anemic, well-dressed country. Oh, they ain't making Jews like Jesus anymore. They don't turn the other cheek the way they done before. He started into shouting and spitting on the floor. Lord, they ain't making Jews like Jesus anymore. He says, now I ain't a racist, but Aristotle Onassis is one Greek we don't need. And them n****s, Jews and Sigma Nus, all they ever do is breed. And Wops and Mix and Slopes and Spicks and Spooks are on my list. And there's one little Hebe from the heart of Texas. Is there anyone I missed? Well, I hits him with everything I had right square between the eyes. I says, I'm going to get you, you son of a bitch, you spouting that pack of lies. If there's one thing I can't abide, it's an ethnocentric racist. Now you take back that thing you said about Aristotle Onassis. Oh, they ain't making Jews like Jesus anymore. We don't turn the other cheek the way we done before. You could hear that honky holler as he hit that hardwood floor. Lord, they ain't making Jews like Jesus anymore. All right, everybody in Tulsa, here we go. Oh, they ain't making Jews like Jesus anymore. We don't turn the other cheek the way we done before. Well, the whole damn place was singing as I strolled right out the door. Lord! Jesus. You know, folks, Jesus loves you can be very comforting words unless you hear them in a Mexican prison. They ain't making Jews like Jesus anymore. Thank you. It's been a financial pleasure.
Thank you very much for joining us, Kinky.
We'll see you down the highway, Rich.
Kinky Friedman speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. You can catch him tonight at 8 o'clock at the Oklahoma Jazz Hall of Fame at 111 East 1st Street. For information, call 918-928-JAZZ or oklahomajazzhall.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.